folks. It's your host, Craig here. Stick around to the end of the episode. I got another Take Two exclusive interview for you. I was able to sit down with writer, director, producer of the new movie, Random Tropical Paradise, Sanjeev Sarpal. The movie just came out June 9th on VOD everywhere and in theaters across the country. We sat down, we talked about what it was like to film with some of the great comedic actors in the movie, whether anything from the film came from inspiration in his real life, and basically just how awesome Danny Trejo is. So make sure to stick around and you can hear that interview at the end of the episode. Now here's this week's newest episode of Take Two with your hosts, Brian and Tony. Take it away, boys.
Welcome back, everybody, to another great episode of Take Two Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Brian, and I've got my partner in crime, Tony, here with me. Tony, what's up, brother?
Hey, what's up? Ready for another Take Tuesday.
This is perfect for you and I. This is episode 35, and That is our age, right?
No, wrong. I'm actually older than you by a couple months.
Your birthday's in January.
Yep, I'm 36 already.
Never mind. We'll
edit that out.
I was close to knowing something about you. A fun fact. Okay. Well, either way, as alluded to, this is episode 35, which is a fun round number. We're chugging along here. How are you on your leftovers postpartum? This is the first week we haven't had leftovers, and never will again.
Yeah, you know, I'm okay, just because I've still got my Carrie Coon on Fargo to hold me over.
Lovely.
But even that's only got a couple episodes, and then that's done. So then I'm going to really drop off the cliff.
Yeah. We'll have to send
I may just depart. Who knows?
Whoa. don't do that. We need you on the show.
Give me 13 reasons why I shouldn't. Put them on a cassette tape and send them to all my friends. I don't know. I don't even know how that show works. Is that how it works?
That's exactly how it works.
Okay.
This is Take Two Podcast. We are at Take Two Podcast on Twitter. Take2podcast@gmail.com is your email. Send in your emails and tweets as to why you want Tony to not depart and stay on the show. Also, check out our web. We have a bunch of blogs that just came up, and I think Tony and I each have two that we're writing currently that are coming out within the next couple of days. Is that right? You have at least two?
Yeah, I've got a couple that I'm waiting on. I haven't gotten a chance, but they're going to be up there. Keep checking back every day.
Take2podcast.com. We put up Wonder Woman today. That's got a combo with Bo and myself wrote something about that. And you can always find them on Twitter as well. And then on Facebook. Jump on Facebook. Everyone has Facebook. Jump on, find us, Take Two Podcast, follow us, because we put up stuff a lot on there, a lot of live video on there. If you ever want to see what we look like, jump over to Facebook.
Mostly Brian, though.
But, yeah, anytime you're ready. Well, don't do it now, because you're about to depart, so.
Yeah. I may or may not have clothes on.
So that would spike the ratings. Tony without a shirt. Happy National Superman Day to you.
Sure. You know, I'm not the biggest Superman fan, but okay, sure.
I see.
I love Smallville. That's all I'm going to say.
When he was not Superman, but we'll take what we can get. I should have had Roy on tonight for that one, but he's not 35 or 36. Shit, that wouldn't have worked. Never mind. Either way, fun day. The whole Superman thing, they do their yearly event out in Metropolis, Illinois. That all wrapped up this past weekend. It looked like a fun event. I got to go one year. They had, like, Dean Cain this year, and they had some legit stars.
It's flights out that way probably aren't much, right?
I remember checking one year, and I think you have to fly to either St. Louis or Chicago, maybe, and then come down. There might be a small airport nearby. I forget exactly what it was. But
you probably have to go around the world the other way, like, a couple times anyways to get there, right?
I would do that. Then I get to the beginning of the event, yeah.
Yeah.
I watched today with my son. We watched Man of Steel, and then we watched the original Superman the movie. And he actually, his bedtime came up before we got to the ending, and I was actually okay with it because that's the only part of Superman the original movie I don't like, flying around the earth backwards.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's a little cheesy, hokey in retrospect.
Well, and it's just if you can do that, then why bother using your powers ever? Just okay, I'll just fly around backwards, save that person now.
Yeah, you're basically just the Flash.
Ugh. Great. All right, let's move along to something actual topical. Last night, Kevin Spacey hosted the 71st annual Tony Awards. which was a grand spectacle, and you got to actually watch them, or watch an abbreviated version at least.
Yeah, I have never been into the Tony Awards. We talked about it before. You kind of gave me a guilt trip, packed my bags for a guilt trip that I was taking, and this year I decided I was going to finally give it a shot. And I turned it on from the beginning, and part of it was because of Spacey. I like Spacey. I'm a big fan.
Sure.
House of Cards, Usual Suspects, all that stuff. Love him. So I was like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. He was good. I enjoyed his bits. I thought he was entertaining. He opened with a nice little musical number montage to all the plays that were nominated and whatnot. And I thought he did a solid job. And then he had a couple other little bits throughout the night where he did some impressions, a Bill Clinton, a Johnny Carson.
I've seen his Carson before. It's decent.
Yeah, he came out as Frank Underwood from House of Cards, which was great. So he did some nice little bits in there that broke it up, and he was funny, and he was solid. He could sing and all that. So I thought it was a good job. I don't know if he was as buzzworthy as some of the last couple hosts were, Corden and whatnot, but yeah. I liked him. I thought he was solid.
He didn't come out as Kaiser Soze? That would have been cool if he came out as Soze.
No. And like I said, I'm not familiar really with the show. To me, it just seemed like a three-hour commercial for Broadway because I'm not familiar with really any of the plays that were nominated. Just Hello, Dolly, just because it's a revival, so I know the original version.
Yeah.
And then Groundhog Day, which I just know it from the film. So,
yeah.
Otherwise, I didn't really know any of the plays that were nominated. So, in all honesty, I just fast-forwarded through a lot of that and saw some bits here or there that interested me. But whatever. I mean, if it gets people interested in the plays and gets them to go seek it out and keeps theater popular, then I'm all for it. You know, obviously somebody's watching it, and it's a fun night for those theater nerds, and like I said, if these shows are popular enough, they'll get to tour, and maybe you'll get to see them in your corner of the country or whatever, so.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, it kind of has to do that, though, because its advertising revenue is pretty limited as to how they advertise, so you're spot on with how it is a long kind of commercial for themselves. It's their chance to do it.
Somebody who, like myself, I'm not that familiar with some of the plays, that the one that won a bunch of awards, I was like, all right, cool. If that comes back around to our area, maybe I'll seek it out. You know, and that's at least I have paid attention to the results in the past. I will say that just to see kind of what's, you know, put my finger on the pulse, if you will, and find out what's popular. Like, you know, Hamilton was the big thing last year or whatever. This year it's Dear Evan Hansen was the big winner. So, I mean,
did you know there's people that list Hamilton as their favorite musical ever, yet they've never actually seen it?
I have heard that. I think I heard that on a podcast somewhere.
Yeah.
There was a certain host who said that they loved the soundtrack and everything, but they've never seen it. So that's very interesting. That's like me saying, you know, Black Panther's my favorite movie ever, just because I've seen a trailer of it.
Ooh, that's a fun teaser for later, folks, because we may speak Black Panther trailer. And if you're curious who that host is, Take Two Podcast, we did a musical special edition episode. Scroll back on iTunes and you can listen to it and find out that tease of whose favorite musical they've never seen. All right, circling back, you mentioned...
spoiler alert.
And it wasn't me, so you're the two out of the three, you're already out. You mentioned a musical that, you know, might have been in this area and also possibly one that's actually accurate because Dear Evan Hansen was the big winner of the night, right?
Yeah, I think it won six awards, best musical, and it premiered here in D.C. in 2015 at the Arena Stage. That's where our show is based out of, is the D.C. Baltimore area. So a little bit of a local story there, which is nice. You know, it justified it. I guess you never know when you're going to see something that could become huge, you know?
Right.
The people that saw that show 2 years ago probably didn't think it was going to win a Tony. You never know. Sometimes you just need to take a chance and go see something.
So they also got leading actor Ben Platt. Did you see this week they shut him down because he needed to rest his vocals?
Oh, no, I didn't. Yeah. I knew there was a big deal about, I mean, because he performed at the Tonys.
Yeah, they shut him down starting Wednesday night's performances and nothing through Sunday because they wanted him to be able to perform on Sunday night for the show. Yeah. So it was kind of a bummer for anyone that bought the tickets.
Yeah, I think his performance was kind of the one that shut down the show. People really gave it a standing O and everything, and it was kind of the highlight of the night, if you will, the performances. So.
Oh, good for him. And he's of Pitch Perfect fame.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was in both of them. More so in the first one, but yeah, he's good stuff, man.
Yeah, he looks familiar. Maybe, yeah. I'm not as huge of a fan of those movies as you. I still have yet to see the second one.
You'd like him. You like music. You'd like him.
Yeah. So, but I know his speech got a little buzz about it. He had a line in there that a bunch of people grabbed onto that he said, don't waste any time being anyone but yourself. Things that make you strange are things that make you powerful. So I guess a lot of people took that as a big moment from his speech.
We get one of those from every award show, so awesome.
Yeah. I was happy to report that, honestly, I didn't hear as much, like, super political stuff. There was a little, like, poking fun political stuff, especially from, like, Spacey and stuff. Bette Midler had a little bit in her speech. She kind of got played off, almost, and she was like, shut that crap off, I'm not done. Like,
whoa, okay.
And I guess people were mad about that, too, that she didn't perform, because I guess her performance in Hello, Dolly! Is, like, really why it was nominated, and it ended up winning, like, Best Revival or whatever, and I guess people were let down that she didn't perform. But
gotcha.
There were some cool performances, though, and recognizable actors and stuff from other stuff. What's his name? David Hyde Pierce from Frasier. I guess he's in Hello, Dolly! Also, so he did a little performance from the show.
Nice.
Kevin Klein won an award. So, I mean, you can watch the Tonys and not be a super, you know, theater nerd, and you're still going to recognize some of these people that are out there. Tina Fey gave an award out. You know, Lin-Manuel Miranda, of course, was back. Josh Gad. You know, so they bring back their kind of more famous alumni to present and whatnot and do some performances. So it was a decent show. I didn't regret watching it, but like I said, my biggest drawback is just not knowing the material, I guess.
As far as name recognition, you know, Cynthia Nixon and Rachel Bay Jones, Kevin Klein, Laurie Metcalf, Bette Midler, as you said, you know, these are names that people know from film and TV. So to at least put their faces out there as winners, that could have helped their stats a little bit for Broadway. I know people. Yep. What was Kevin Klein's stat? Did you look that up? It's been 32 years since he won, or something crazy.
Oh really? I didn't know. Yeah, I mean, same thing with Bette Midler. She's actually never won before tonight. She won like a lifetime achievement kind of thing, but she never actually won one.
Oh really?
And she's been on Broadway for like 40 years on and off or something. So.
Right.
But they did say that all the nominees for the best new play this year were American authors, which I thought Spacey said was the first time this happened. Maybe not, but it was an interesting point that they made, that they were all American authors. I guess that doesn't happen too often. So.
Wow, that's cool.
They also had our girl Rachel Bloom, we've talked about before. She was doing kind of like the backstage hosting, if you will.
Oh wow, okay.
So she was fun and interesting. Who's the younger guy that does like the opera singing? I can't think of his name. I cannot remember his name for the life of me, but he was on there. So like I said, a lot of recognizable faces. Stephen Colbert was up on stage a little bit with Spacey. They did a little Groundhog Day bit. Whoopi Goldberg was up there for a little bit. There's a lot of little fun things, and it was enjoyable for what I watched. I don't know if I'd watch every year.
Oh, wait, is it Groban?
Groban, Josh Groban. Yeah, I couldn't remember his damn name. Sorry.
There you go. No problem.
Yeah. But yeah, he had a performance. So, like I said, you can enjoy the performances. I was a little surprised, I will say, by Groundhog Day. I thought that was, like, the weakest one that I saw. I just didn't think it, like, the song they did didn't sound that good to me and everything. I'm surprised it was nominated. Honestly, I wasn't that impressed, because before I was like, oh cool, Groundhog Day, I might want to check that out, I like the movie.
Sure.
But I just wasn't sold on the musical aspect of it. I would see Waitress. They kind of alluded to that a little bit. I don't think it was really nominated for much, but I like the movie Waitress. I don't know if you've seen that.
No, but I did read up all the buzz on the show, and so I'll go with you. Wait, that sounded weird. With, like, we'll bring our wives, like, and,
well,
you know.
Well, the movie was great. Carrie Russell.
Yeah.
It's a great movie. And then, I guess, Sarah Bareilles does the music for the play. So, it got some buzz. But, yeah, those were kind of like the snubs. That one, I think Willy Wonka, people expected to get some nominations, and it didn't.
A good year for August Wilson, because he had Best Revival of a Play. So, with Fences being nominated for his film adaptation. And then Jitney, right, won Best Revival of a Play. So, good year for him all around. That's cool. Yeah, I definitely want to go see Spacey's opening. A lot of people don't realize that Spacey can sing and dance and does impressions. And
yeah, well, he showed a picture of, I think he was on Broadway before years ago. I mean, he looked young, and I'm not sure what show he was in, but it was a young Spacey, so maybe it was off Broadway, but he has a little bit of history in theater.
I'll definitely have to check out at least his open, and then the numbers, at the very least. I could pass by the speeches.
Yeah, but definitely.
But cool. All right, cool. So moving right along, we had some sad news this week. Kind of like a 10-day stretch of losing some icons. We lost Roger Moore 2 weeks ago, not even. And then this week, at the age of 88, the original Batman, Adam West, passed away.
Yeah, our buddy Thomas, Brian Thomas, must be sad with losing two of his main characters here.
No kidding. Good for ratings on his show, the Batman vs. James Bond podcast. When you're done listening to us, go check out Brian Thomas on Batman vs. James Bond. We love that show, and he's a good friend of ours. But, yeah, a rough go of it. I think this was kind of, if anybody thought about it, he was 88. If you had seen him recently, I saw him do a thing New Year's with Kevin Spacey on their podcast. Oh, jeez, I flipped. Kevin Smith. Mm-hmm. You could just tell that West, you could just tell he was 88, and he was old. He was getting up there. So I think this was kind of expected to soon happen, but still, that doesn't make it hit you any less harder.
Yeah, they said it was leukemia, right? I mean, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, they kept it a big secret, right?
So, I mean, because he's still been doing shows and signings as of even 2 weeks ago, they said.
Wow. Good for him. So, most well-known for 66 version of Batman, he and Burt Ward. I think that's who introduced a lot of us to the character of Batman, if you weren't reading the comics, because that show was so popular. Even for us, like, I remember watching that as a kid.
Sure.
All the time as a kid.
I mean, it was silly. Yeah, it was silly, but it was fun, and he was very iconic. I think it was more like his voice than anything.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of had that iconic, you know, because he went on and did a lot of voice work, too.
Right.
I watch Family Guy. I might be one of the only people that still watches it, but he's hilarious on Family Guy. He plays himself. He plays the mayor of the town that they're in, Quahog, and he is Adam West. I mean.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he's hilarious on the show.
See, I was going to say, I think that gave him new legs. Like, gave even the Batman show new legs.
Well, and didn't they just do, like, a direct-to-DVD, like, a year ago, bringing him back
as Batman? He and Burt Ward, and they filmed another one, which I'm pretty sure wrapped. It's in post-production, a sequel to that one, where it's animated, but he and Ward and a couple of other older actors from the original show voiced the characters in it, which is pretty cool. That was Batman Return of the Caped Crusader, but...
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean... He's an icon, and like you said, he introduced the character to a lot of people. He is Batman. You know, you can work a whole career and have all these movies and shows and all that, but he's always going to be Batman. For those, 2 years that was actually on?
Right.
Like, 66 to 68, but that's his whole life was Batman, so.
Yeah, and that shows you the power of the Comic-Cons and things like that. They keep guys like that going, that's for sure.
Sure.
So... Okay, rest in peace, Adam West. Prayers and love to his family and friends, and thank you for all the fun times, Adam West. Moving along to our box office. No proper way to segue out of that, I guess. Wonder Woman, another comic hero. Wonder Woman was the big winner this week. She had the smallest comic book drop-off from weeks 1 to 2 ever. She broke the record. It only went down about 47%, which... sounds like a lot, but folks, this is a common thing where something will drop, you know, drastically, like 60%, 70%, because everyone saw it the first weekend, especially a film that made over $100 million. It's weekend one. Weekend two, people go do something else and they see something. So, you know, it'll drop 60, 80%. But this thing only dropped, I'm looking at 43%, and that's the smallest drop ever from a week 1 to 2 comic book film. So it's still churning out some cash, $58 million.
Not to mention, Rotten Tomatoes is still 93. I mean, people love it. It's getting great reviews. So.
That's insane. So if you were to guess the next film that had the smallest drop-off, which is at 49% of all the comic films, which one would you guess? By me saying it that way, I'm kind of alluding to this would be... let's see. Iron Man, I don't even have Iron Man on my chart, to be honest here. So, nope, not Iron Man.
I don't know.
Thor, the original Thor.
What?
Yeah. I'm wondering, I don't have the numbers, I'm wondering if because maybe it didn't make that much money its opening weekend?
Yeah, maybe. And maybe it's a little more word of mouth kind of thing.
Yeah, so that's why it factored. Yeah, number 3, Doctor Strange.
See, I didn't really care for Strange that much. I know I'm in the minority, but I didn't really care for it.
No, not on this show. I didn't much like it either. I tried
watching it the first time. I fell asleep, and then I had to come back around to it again and again. I was just like bored with it. I don't know. Not big on that character, I guess.
Rounding out those top 5, Avengers, Guardians, and Guardians Part 2 all had the smallest drop-offs. The other ones make sense. Avengers and the two Guardians. So anyway, congrats to Wonder Woman on that stat. So then we get to a flop, and this hurts for me for the summer blockbuster draft that we did, because this was my number two seed. But The Mummy, Tom Cruise's worst reviewed film of all time, only pulls in $31 million for its opening, $125 million budget, and didn't even come close to sniffing that. Now, ironically, overseas, it did very well. Made about $135 overseas, which was Cruise's best opening overseas, I think. So,
yeah, that's what they said. Best worldwide opening.
Yeah, so pretty weird how that works out sometimes.
And again, like you said, the Rotten Tomatoes are awful. The review's 17%. I mean, I'm just wondering if this is going to put the whole Dark Universe into jeopardy, because I was really looking forward to it. And I don't know if this just stops all those plans or if the global take is going to cover it enough to justify. I don't know.
I think from here on out, you and I shouldn't do shows together, just us, because we just say the same things.
We do.
Like,
yeah,
I agree with you. I really am looking forward to the Dark Universe. And now with it not coming out until 2019, now they've got enough time for them to say, whoa, maybe let's pump the brakes and rethink a couple things here, you know, if they really want to get that drastic.
Yeah. Now, this is a thing where they would do a good job taking notes from some of the other horror hits that have come out recently, I think. If you look at Get Out or Split, they didn't spend but, you know, 10 mil or less on their budget, and then they made a killing. Where, you know, you're spending how much? 125 on The Mummy with Tom Cruise? Maybe you should scale it back and make it more low budget and just hope you recoup your money at least.
Yeah.
Like, similar to these other movies, you know?
Shoot, I'm blanking. What was the horror movie where the couple goes into the blind guy's house?
Don't Breathe.
There it is. Don't Breathe. Don't. That's it. Yeah, but anyway, that with Get Out, that style of film, that low budget is what they should look into going forward. From the reviews I read, it said that Cruise didn't do anything wrong. He was just horrible for that character.
Yeah, well, yeah, because it sounded like they were just trying to change him up, like kind of what you typically see him play, which is a good idea, but maybe that's one of those things where people are just set in their ways and they want to see him be Tom Cruise. They want the fast run or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, say he's a jerk in the film. Like, there's no reason for you to cheer for the guy.
See, I might like that. I still am intrigued to go see it, honestly.
All right, moving along. Captain Underpants, the first epic movie, $12 million. Pirates of the Caribbean, $10 million. And Guardians Part 2, $6 million. Other week oneers, It Comes at Night, which is still is getting good reviews. It didn't show well at the box. Well, I guess it showed well for an indie film. 5.9, just under $6 million.
Which its budget was only 5. This is, again, same studio, I believe, that did Get Out and Split, A24, ones that distribute it, and they've been doing it smart. They don't spend a lot, but they'll make their money back for sure. Because I want to say they did Moonlight as well.
That sounds accurate, but yeah, you're right. They're doing something right over there.
Yeah, they're doing some low-budget stuff, either, you know, indie art house stuff or horror, and they're making their money back, and then some.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're reading the box office. It's not barely in the top 10, but it doesn't matter to them. They're making their money back.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going for that big, sexy story of number one. They just want their money back, and they're doing it. So, you know, kudos to them.
The other week oneers that came out this week were Megan Levy and My Cousin Rachel. Megan Levy, I saw a big push over the weekend for that. It only made 3.8, which isn't bad, but blah, blah, blah.
Now, I don't want to sound heartless. I had to talk about this with somebody else, but I just feel like that doesn't intrigue me to go see the theater at all. It just seemed like it was like a Lifetime movie. What was the other one? Cousin Rachel?
My Cousin Rachel. It has Rachel Wise in it. Anywho, so that rounds out our box office. That brings us to our summer blockbuster draft update. The only person to get stuff was myself with The Mummy at the 31.6. That puts my total to 93 and some change. Still haven't broken 100. That's a dagger.
Sitting at number 3?
Yeah, still sitting in third. Nick is still winning at his, 182-ish, somewhere around there.
Yeah, he's crushing us.
182. Craig's at 103. Myself at 93. And what a Bo at 23, Rory at 22, and then Tony at 18.6. I mean, you still have two films to go. Baywatch killed you. That's going to be the biggest flop of the summer.
Well, and then I've got Baby Driver, which I think it's getting great reviews and all that, but it's not going to be a huge hit. That's more of like a word of mouth. It might make money over multiple weeks. It's not going to be a big opening weekend. So I'm done. Might as well wrap it up.
I think we all. I mean, Nick has Despicable 3 as his final pick. That thing itself is going
to
make.
I mean, no. Nick's even like gloating about it. He doesn't even want to come on the show and talk to us anymore. He's like, yeah, I'm winning. I don't even need to come on here.
I'm out. I won a contest that has no prize. I'm out.
Yep. He's done.
Well, I mean, you can still hold your bachelorette trophy high.
Yeah, that's the only thing I'll ever win. Which I really did not care about. It was just sheer luck.
The irony of it all is you were the one host who desperately did not want to do that segment, and you wound up winning.
I was the only one?
Yeah, I think Roy was kind of on it, and actually, Nick was. Nick was a little on it as well, but they realized, like you, for the good of the show, let's give it a whirl. But you were definitely the most adamant about it, that's for sure.
Yeah, I just have no interest. I'm not big on like reality TV overall, so. Now, was that the movie... Okay, My Cousin Rachel, that has the kid from Hunger Games in it. Sam Claflin or whatever?
Yes.
Remember, we had talked off-air about this, how he came out and said something about being body-shamed.
Oh, that's right.
Is that the movie that they body-shamed him on? I don't...
It had to have been, right?
You know, he came out and he said he felt like a piece of meat on whatever he was filming because they were grabbing at his abs, I guess, saying like he had gained weight from what he looked like as Finnick in Hunger Games.
Huh.
So he was coming out and saying he was body shamed, which, gotta say, you don't ever hear guys making that argument. I don't know, maybe it's a good thing. Maybe you should lay off.
Stand up for the man and our dad bods.
Yeah. Right, especially the white guys. It's not like we get anything in life. I mean,
that's right. We work hard for these dad bods, okay? Leave us alone. Yeah, old, what's his name? Sam Cliff Clavin?
Yeah, Cliff Clavin, Sam.
I mean, I felt that.
But the discussion came up earlier that week with that other, the animated Snow White movie. Again, this is kind of old news, but me and Brian have talked off air about it. What are your thoughts on that one?
It's a little ridiculous, and definitely ridiculous that Chloe Moretz didn't know about it, or so she claimed.
Yeah. Well, and for the listeners that don't know, it was another kind of body-shaming thing where it was an animated movie about Snow White, and they used ads and everything to kind of say basically being fat isn't beautiful, and they're kind of marketing it towards kids that way, which a lot of people are up in arms about. So it's interesting, and I think they do have a point there that the movie's basically showing her, you know, what if she wasn't beautiful anymore, and it shows her as being fat, so...
Right, and basically saying that she wouldn't have gotten the pub that she did if she wasn't, you know, as good-looking as Snow White was.
Mm-hmm. They said there's even, like, scenes in the movie, I guess, where the dwarfs see her change from, like, the hot Snow White to the chubbier version, and they're like, ugh, like, aghast and, like,
yeah,
really repulsed by her and everything. It would be different if it wasn't playing towards kids, I think. Like, I think that's really tone-deaf of them.
In DC news, Gotham had its finale. You and I are big Gotham fans. I forget who else on our show is. I think it's just you and I watch Gotham. What were your thoughts? What were your thoughts on this season? What are your thoughts going towards next season?
Well, we've kind of talked about it before briefly, where I really enjoyed the season, how they split it up into, what, three different sections, I want to say, right?
Yeah, and I like that they named
only
them.
Two. Huh?
Yeah, I think it's only two, because they only came back for, like, two episodes, right? Two or three?
Yeah, because they did, like, the Mad City, or whatever they called it, right? With Tetch, when he started it. And then they went away, what, January to April? And then they came back and kind of focused on Riddler and all that. Heroes Rise.
Yeah.
Was the sub genre, if you will. But yeah, I like the way that they did that. It's like, you got two seasons in one, and I thought they always bring on so much, and it works. It's like the anti-Spider-Man 3. You know, Spider-Man will bring on so many people that it sucks, but Gotham can do it. They can really juggle all these characters pretty well, I think. And I really enjoyed the season finale. It was 2 hour, kind of maybe sucked because it was a little long being 2 hour, but they gave you a lot, especially in that last hour.
Yeah, I was not prepared for the 2 hour when I sat down to watch the, because I DVR'd it. And went to watch it the next day, and for some reason I was like, whoa, we still... I don't know why I wasn't ready for that, but I had to watch it in two sessions. Yeah, they went November 28th, they finished up, took a breather till January 16th, and gave us three episodes. And that third episode, they wrapped up the Joker, or Jerome, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Which that was fun. That was a fun, quick little three episode story arc, and then it also kind of gave you a little bit of Jerome. I wasn't sure if I totally liked the Jerome with the cutting off of the face part.
Yeah, it was an interesting twist on the character. They do try to at least give you something different, not what the movies have already given you.
Yeah. And then they came back in April, at the end of April, and switched it over to Heroes Rise and gave us the final nine episodes-ish wrapping up the season. So it was very cool how they did it.
Yeah. No, I mean, and spoiler alert, they gave you quite a few new introductions to characters or we got a hint towards Solomon Grundy.
Yeah.
I guess. We got a hint. Well, I didn't really get the hint to Harley Quinn. Like, they spoiled it before the episode. Like, oh, Harley Quinn's going to be introduced. Mm-hmm. But you really didn't get her introduced.
I didn't see it at all. I missed it totally.
To me, you had two characters that could possibly become Harley Quinn. I have a feeling it's going to be Lee.
Okay.
We love Marina Baccarin. Only because after she was cured of the virus or whatever, you saw her, and she had like the red and blue like scarf thing.
Right.
And I don't know if that was like the hint we were supposed to be looking for. But by the same token, I felt like Barbara really was already acting like Harley Quinn most of the season anyways.
Yeah, she was definitely on that path.
Yeah, just unhinged. So I feel like you could go either way with it, and I'd actually be okay if either way. I was glad we got rid of Fish Mooney. Hopefully that's for good, because I don't like that character.
100%. I was done with her season one.
Yeah, not a fan.
Killed her 7 times now. Let's be done with her, please.
I'm glad we still have Donald Loge alive, because to me, he's the best part of the show.
No disrespect to Jada Pinkett or the actor. I don't like the character of Fish Mooney. Anyway.
Well, it was made for the show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I will disrespect Jada. I think it was shitty. I think she did it. I didn't like her cadence of like the way she spoke. Anything about the character, it didn't work for me. And I'm glad that they finally have moved on. I did not really care for, I think you agreed with me, the Chiklis arc that they did with Michael Chiklis.
And I thought they also missed some points with making him the executioner. Like, they automatically gave him the robotic axe arm, if you will, and then they stopped him by shooting off that hand. I thought if they're going to bring him back later, which you have a feeling they will, they should have let him just carry a regular big-ass axe to be the executioner, then shoot it off, and then he can come back next season with the robotic hand. I was dumb when he died at the hands of Theo Gallivan.
It was like Dumas.
Yeah, Gallivan.
It was Azrael he became.
There it is. So when Chiklis died at the hands of Azrael, or we thought he was gonna, I was okay with it. I was like, all right, it tugged at your heart a little, and then he was done, and Barnes was out.
Yeah, because I liked him as Barnes. I think just making him executioner was stupid.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Because then he got the Mirakuru in him.
Did we get Lucius introduced this season? He wasn't on last season, right?
I want to say yes, we got him last season, but this season he really grew into a character.
Yeah, which I liked. I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
He worked well.
I thought he was great this year.
Yeah, and then to me, no offense to the main character who plays Bruce, what's his name, David Masseuse?
Yeah.
He's just kind of background dressing to me, like waiting to get there. If anything, that was the part of the finale I was like, oh really, we're already kind of making him Batman? Like,
I was just disappointed in that, because where did that come from? Like, all of a sudden now he's a fighter and he's gonna wear a mask and go beat up a random person that's gonna a random mugger.
I don't know, because I'm really enjoying, like, I like the guy who plays Alfred, Sean Pertwee. He does a great job with Alfred, I think. He's one of my favorite Alfreds.
There's three elements that we can get into an argument about which are the best part of the show, just in a whole. And I'll throw an argument Alfred's way, and for that actor's way. I think he's fantastic. I think the direction they took the character makes total sense and is what Alfred should have been like from the beginning of the comics. Yeah. And I love the actor and the way he plays him. I'm a big fan of it. I'm a big fan of him and this character in the show.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you got Ben McKenzie as Gordon and David Masseuse as Bruce Wayne. To me, they're not even the stars of the show. I know they're supposed to be, but they're not. I love Donald Loge as Harvey. I love Sean Pertwee as Alfred. And then I love the Riddler and Penguin back and forth. I think they've done a great job with both of those actors, because I think Penguin was the kind of first breakout in like the first season, but then the Riddler was the man this season, and they really focused on him a lot. And Corey Michael Smith, who plays him, was fantastic.
Yeah, I've become a big fan of Corey Michael Smith, especially last year bleeding into this year. Like, his arc of becoming the Riddler has been fantastic.
Yeah, they've done a great job of him.
And it saved the Penguin.
Robin Lord Taylor, who plays Penguin, awesome first season, and they've kept him going and kept him interesting, at least.
Agreed. So, agreed.
Yeah,
overall, I liked Gotham a lot. I liked the way they did it. It was awkward with the gaps in between, but then in the end, it made sense. It kind of helped you out once you got to the end, because it did give you the different storylines, and it let you take a breather from one and then move on to the next one. And this finale, outside of him all of the sudden becoming Batman, which I didn't...
It was good otherwise, yeah. It was good otherwise.
Yeah, I liked everything else. I liked, you know, the characters we might get next year. I hope they don't force too much Joker and Jerome down our throats again. I'd be okay if we didn't see him all next year.
I'd rather them pursue more of the Red Hood kind of characters and do that.
Oh, yeah.
They kind of hinted it and didn't follow it that much. I don't know. We'll see. Solomon Grundy will be interesting. And depending on how they do Harley will be interesting. I'm not a huge fan of Roz, especially since we've already got him a lot on Arrow. I mean, that in a perfect world, I wish we would have had the same Roz, like, in both shows, and maybe would have had a little crossover element, you know, that would have been cool.
Yeah.
But since they're on different networks, you're never going to see that happen, which is a shame. So.
Yeah, see, I would have loved everything if Bruce Wayne, like, left. Like, he and Alfred, like, they needed to get away, needed to clear his head, so they went to go on a journey, and then that's where he finds the League and then trains with them. You know what I mean? Like, something like that.
Yeah.
He goes away to begin his training. Not all of a sudden now he just wants to beat up people who, isn't he still only 15 years old?
Yeah. I mean, because they kind of did that route with the Court of Owls instead. They should have done it with League of Shadows. I think you should have had Alfred continue to train him, maybe at home.
Yeah.
And then done League of Shadows, not Court of Owls.
Yeah.
But whatever. It's working for me. It's still an interesting show, and I'm looking forward to it next season.
Yeah. So. I liked it. Anyone that... watches Gotham or is interested in Gotham, highly recommended on our end. And shoot us your thoughts, take2podcast@gmail.com, at take2podcast on Twitter. And we're on Facebook, of course, take2podcast. And if you're lucky, we'll write up a little blog on Gotham and throw it on take2podcast.com.
Yep. We should have that up later this week, as well as I'm going to try and get an overview of Leftovers up. We won't go into Leftovers much, because if you guys want to hear us talk about it, there's 8 episodes you can find us talking about it. We went over every single episode, and we loved it. Great season finale in that one also that just ended this week. So if you want to hear our thoughts on that, go check us out on iTunes, Podomatic. Don't forget to give us reviews, ratings, and follows while you're there.
I don't think we want to write Leftovers, because how long would that take us?
you're better off just listening to us talk for 8 hours or however long we talked.
Yeah, Tony and myself and Rory was in on 6 of them. We break them all down. It's good stuff. All right, so that's DC. Moving along to the other side of the field, Marvel released a trailer. I think you made this statement earlier, I don't know, 2 months ago, that Marvel, since they're at the level they're at right now, they're always ready right as you get excited for something DC-wise, i.e. last weekend we got excited for Wonder Woman. Boom, they got something to drop on you. And this week they dropped the Black Panther trailer.
Yeah, they know how to counter-program, because even if you were paying attention to the finals, they were doing Spider-Man little drops throughout, too.
Yeah.
So they knew what they were doing. People are watching basketball. They want to see the Cavs come back, which they might still, but probably not. By the time you're listening to this, the Cavs probably have been eliminated. But
I was going to say, I think the Cavs were watching the Spider-Man drops as well.
Maybe. Maybe they were excited by the Panther trailer as we were, because I thought it was pretty solid. Pretty solid.
I liked it. It had a different feel to it that I was expecting, I guess. And
yeah, like very... I don't know, like all the tribal stuff and stuff. I didn't know we were going to get all that, maybe. I was very happy to see Claw back after we got a little tease of him in Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Michael B. Jordan looked like he may be good as the villain there with his little side dreads.
What do you think he says when he goes to the barber? And does he show him a picture of that, like his kid drew in art class in kindergarten? So give me this hairdo?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not familiar with the comic. I've never read Black Panther. Maybe that's the way he looks in the comic. I don't know. But it was an interesting do, and I'm excited to see him play that role because he really hasn't gone that route. And he's a great actor, so I'm looking forward to him challenging himself.
Fully agree. All right,
and cool. I like Black Panther from what we got in Civil War, so this just looks like more of the same. Plus, you get Lupita Nyong'o in there. She was kicking some ass. And we still haven't even seen Sterling K. Brown, so I don't know what he's doing in the film, but he's, you know, it's a great cast, really, if you think about it.
Oh, big time.
Some real heavy hitters, so.
If you want to watch the trailer, jump on to @Take2Podcast Twitter feed or go over to Facebook for Take2Podcast and jump on either one of those spots. We posted the trailer earlier this week, and as you're scrolling through looking at all of our good content, the Black Panther trailer is on there, and you can watch it there.
We had that up there in within minutes, if not seconds, of it showing on TV and
Boom.
Premiering.
We're moving so good. We're getting screeners of films. We get to see movies early now, and we've got...
Be jealous.
Suckers. And we've got trailers that we're posting like within seconds. We also had Adam West. That was breaking news for some of our fans.
Yeah, we're scooping it. We're scooping some news now, so pay attention.
Yeah. We weren't the first ones that knew that he died. We were just the first ones to tell some people.
And also, if you care, I'm kind of our music research guy, but if you like the song in the Black Panther trailer, it's called Legend Has It by Run the Jewels. So go ahead and download that. You'll thank me later.
Run the Jewels.
That's right.
So speaking of that screener, we have at the end of tonight's show, we probably should have mentioned this earlier, not in the 42-minute mark. at the end of tonight's episode, Craig got to sit down with the writer, the director, and the producer of Random Tropical Paradise, a new straight-to-release film. It was supposed to be straight-to-video on demand, but it actually got theatrical release in New York and L.A. and fun areas. Sanjeev Sirpal got to be on there with Craig. They did a one-on-one interview. They were supposed to talk for about 6 minutes. They wound up talking for about 45. We condensed the interview down to 21 just to help everybody out a little bit. But that's going to be on the end of tonight's show. And then later on this week, guys, look, Friday-ish, we'll be on there. Craig and I are going to do a specialty show just about this film because these guys are great. We really liked it. And they were really nice in coming on doing the interview. It's got Spencer Grammer in it, Beth Littleford, and Joe Pantoliano of Sopranos and Matrix fame. So stick around to the end and you'll hear Craigie's sweet voice talking with the writer and director of Random Tropical Paradise.
Let's get Joey Pants on the show. I want to talk to him.
That'd be cool. Joe, if you're listening, feel free to give us a call anytime. And we'll chat about whatever you want, including this film, maybe.
Now, to get an interview with him, do we all have to sit in that chair and, like, jack in, like, get the plug in the back of the neck? And
That'd be awesome. That'd be fantastic. We were talking about this earlier. Like, he's in this movie, and we'd love to talk about this movie and promo at this Random Tropical Paradise. But there's so many other things I'd want to ask about.
Yeah, it would spiral out of control.
Yeah, the poor guy.
Yeah. That's what we do.
This is true.
It's why you guys love us.
All right, what kind of news do we got rocking, Tony? You got anything good?
The only two things of note that I came across, at least for myself, was they've already cast Doctor Who. They've teased us. I've never really seen anybody do this. Like, we're going to tease you and not tell you. Like, we know who we've got, but we're not going to tell you.
Huh.
Like, I thought that was an interesting approach. Like, we already know who Doctor Who's going to be, but we're not telling the public yet. And I don't know if that's just because they're planning on... A lot of times they kind of... I don't know if you've watched the show before, but they will introduce the character within the show, and that's kind of... Maybe they're trying to hold on to it until they do that. Give it more of like a surprise-y feel, so...
Nice.
But yeah, that came out earlier today. Actually, our friend Casey Spivey had that featured on her Twitter, and that's where I saw that. And then also, I'm a big fan of Luther, the BBC show starring Idris Elba. And after season 4, there was a lot of talk of the show was done. They were talking about possibly doing a film. That never really materialized. So they came out today and announced they are going to do a season 5. And
really?
It's only like 3 or 4 episodes at a time when they do it. You know, a lot of those BBC shows and stuff, that's how they roll. It's a great show. If you have never seen it, go check it out. I believe all the episodes are on Netflix. Definitely worth a watch. He plays a detective, and I just love the guy. Anything he's in, I will watch. So if not for The Wire, like the Stringer Bell character from The Wire, this is his next character that he's probably most well known for. Yeah, go check out Luther, and I'm looking forward to some new episodes.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So, let's see. I have that The Bachelor in Paradise, which I know you're a big fan of that show, is currently...
Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. Let's roll back for a second. Yeah, so that's all the news I have, Brian. What do you have?
You did a long pause. I thought you were done.
No, I was done, but I did a terrible segue for you. I didn't kick it to you at all.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just thought your long dead air pause was your way of saying, okay, you can talk now.
All right. I think I fell asleep in my own news.
Okay. That's never happened before. All right, sorry. We're not going to edit any of this out, but go. Do your segue.
All right, Brian, that's all I have. So what about your news this week?
Oh, hey, I've got a couple of quick things here, Tony. Bachelor in Paradise. I know you're a big fan of that show.
Ugh.
It is currently suspended. They had to shut down production because of misconduct claims. Did you happen to see this?
Sounds like a couple people got freaky right off the bat, right? First day of filming?
Yeah. Suspended over alleged misconduct on set. A couple of the contestants there even tweeted out RIP, BIP, meaning that this isn't even going to come back. There
was the one thing I read said that it was like a cast or a crew member was like suing the production company. And that's why, like, they're not going to be able to produce any more episodes because of the lawsuit.
Wowzers. Yeah, the one girl, Corinne, was so drunk on the first day of filming, she had no ability to consent to DeMario's sexual advances.
Mm-hmm.
This is leading the lawsuit, but then apparently there was another event. But the main crux of it is Corinne and DeMario. There was rubbing and touching and whatever. Other stuff listed if you really want to get into the details. Other sites have it. That's a popular show, man. And it is currently suspended, possibly never coming back. Until
now, is it a mix of characters that are cast off from both Bachelor and Bachelorette? Is that how it works?
You say that like you don't know the answer. Yeah.
No, I'm serious. Is that what I know? Because I know, like, the last Bachelorette was on there or whatever.
I've never watched it, but they take spark plug characters, you know, people that drive your ratings from each show, like The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. They'll take about five guys, five girls, and then throw them in a house together a la... Road Rules, or what was the other one before that?
Real World.
Yeah, that's the one I was looking for. In that scenario, but it's all a very, you know, everyone's in bathing suits in a, you know, tropical location, so they're all scantily clad type scenario. And that's
it. This is on ABC?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So.
Well, I can see why it's a big to-do then. I mean, that would probably play well on E! Or something like that, but you can't have it on ABC.
True, especially with that type of a sexual assault, that is a buzzkill phrase, if you will.
That's assault, brother.
Mm-hmm. Also, I've got Kevin Can Wait. Have you seen this show? I haven't.
No, I believe Nick's the only one who loves Kevin James enough to know what it is.
Tis true. Kevin James is the lead. This is his follow-up show to King of Queens, which
King
I actually...
of Queens.
I watched King of Queens. I was a fan of King of Queens. That was a good show.
That was on for a while, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, big time. So Leah Remini was on that, played his wife, and the final episode of season one of Kevin Can Wait, she had a little guest spot on the show just to drive ratings, and any fan of that show would watch, and it worked. It was their highest rated episode of the season. Aaron Hayes plays his wife on the show. The episode also concluded with both of them losing their jobs. She lost her job for some political reason from what I was reading. Again, I don't watch. And it left it, like, in limbo, what was going to happen going forward. Well, now we know what's going forward. She is out. They're removing the character. His wife is gone. And they're signing Leah Remini to be on full-time starting next year.
Well, why? Why didn't you just do that from the get-go?
Who knows, dude? Who knows?
That seems really stupid to me.
Yeah, so there's no word as to if Remini is going to be a love interest or just like a partner. He plays a cop, so they're talking maybe buddy cop type thing with the two of them.
Are they going after the Scientologists?
Yeah.
Isn't that her thing now?
To go after him? Yeah.
Yeah. That would actually be cool. I could watch that. I mean, it makes sense then. Kevin Can Wait.
Right. Exactly. So this is a weird scenario that I feel the show is not going to last past Thanksgiving of next year.
Maybe that's what Last Man Standing should have done. They should have brought Jill back.
Yeah.
Or Wilson at the very least.
Yeah. So is it Wilson would have came back to make fences great again?
Yeah. Hidey ho, neighbor.
Interesting. I find that, you know, I have no interest in watching that show, but I'm interested to see what happens to it. That's pretty wild to fire your lead, who is the wife on the show, and then replace it with just that whole scenario is funky.
Yeah. So I want to talk some Netflix for a couple minutes. I know we're already going long, but
no,
Netflix has been killing it. No, Netflix has been killing it lately. We talked last week about Keepers and how much I love Keepers. Then I got into Kimmy Schmidt, which me and Craig love Kimmy Schmidt. I finished up the third season of that. Not really much you can say about that. It's a funny show. If you haven't watched it, watch it. Tina Fey writes a lot of it. If you were a fan of 30 Rock, you'll love this. Third season, they got a lot more like guest hosts, or not hosts, but celebrity cameos on the show. Laura Dern was on there. Ray Liotta was on there. Just
wow,
kind of, yeah, funny little guest spots. Maya Rudolph was playing Dionne Warwick, which I thought was great. And, you know, the show features Kimmy Schmidt's character. Obviously, her name is in the title, but the real star of the show is Titus. Titus Burgess plays Titus Andromedon, and he is like her best friend or whatever, and he's hysterical on the show. So if you've never watched it, go check it out. Ellie Kemper is great. Carol Kane is on it. And
oh, really?
Jane Krakowski, who was also on 30 Rock. So really funny show. This is his third season, but you can go back and watch it. It's not like it's a heavily serialized show. You're not going to, you know, miss much, but it's a great show. And they still have John Hamm in there a little bit too. John Hamm was on there since the beginning, but very sparingly. So, yeah, well, because I know, I mean, he had been on 30 Rock before with Tina Fey.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, he was on there a few times, and he's always been in a comedic role, which I love. He doesn't do that enough. And you watch Saturday Night Live. I thought he was great when he was on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, big time.
Remember we did the John Hamm's John Hamm?
John Hamm,
I thought
yeah.
that was hysterical. Yeah. So, yeah, he's really funny. He plays, basically the setup of the show is she was kidnapped and made to live in a bunker, and he is this religious cult leader that kidnapped her and made her live in a bunker. So, like, 15 years of her life are lost living in this bunker. And then when she comes out, she doesn't know anything. She's very, like, dated in her references and everything. She's, like, stuck in, like, the late 80s, early 90s.
Huh.
It was the first season setup to the comedy, but from there it's developed into a better show. And I think it's hilarious. And
okay.
I'm a fan of Tina Fey and all those actors, so.
Super. What season is it?
That was the third season.
Three. Okay.
Yep, just finished. And then, like I said, Netflix kept it coming with season 5 of House of Cards. Probably, in my opinion, the best one since the beginning. I really feel like they hit a great stride in this season. Robin Wright is on quite a roll, coming off Wonder Woman. She's a badass, and now she's a badass in House of Cards, and just keeps it going. I don't want to really talk about it too much and give anything away. I will write it up on the blog,
cool.
or the website, rather, take2podcast.com. So I may go a little spoilery in my write-up. But go check out this show. If you have not checked it out yet, it is great. I know somebody that was on it in season 3, I believe it was. Three?
Two,
episode 13 or
yeah.
Something like that.
Can't remember. Probably episode 5, somewhere around like the 41-minute mark. Two scenes. They're not consecutive, though, so you have to stick around.
But yeah, so now we're in season 5, and it's great. They've got rid of some characters. They brought on some new characters. It's refreshed the show a little bit. Joel Kinnaman was great on this season, playing kind of a political rival to Kevin Spacey. To me, Kevin Spacey has solidified himself in this role as, like, this is his iconic role, more so even than Kaiser Soze. Like,
really?
He is Frank Underwood to me. Every time I see him now, that's all I think of. And like I said, Robin Wright steps it up this year. Her character is amazing. Their little lackey, played by Michael Kelly, he plays Doug Stamper. He was just on Taboo recently. But he plays like the chief of staff at the White House, and they're all just devious people, and they play them so well. And this season was great. We got to see Neve Campbell come back. I don't know where she's been, but I was glad to see her back.
Was she on the show before?
Scream, huh?
Was she on the show before, or you just mean like back as in acting?
She came on last season a little bit, but she was on it more this year. It's a great, great show, and I really thought this season was fantastic. If you haven't watched it yet, go check it out. And then Now they brought us Orange is the New Black, season 5. I got another show to binge watch for the next week or so, so give me a week or so, I'll have something else to talk to you about.
Does your family remember what you look like?
Well, it depends. Do they have, like, I have, like, a Bluetooth in and a phone in front of me, or, like, a screen of some kind in front of me. That's like, the family portrait. Yeah.
So you're Wilson to them. You just have, like, your phone in front of half of your face.
Yep. I say, hi to your home family. And I'm just streaming Netflix nonstop. Because they're killing me.
This will be the one episode that your wife listens to and then is like, yep.
Well, I'll tell you, House of Cards, that was, like, Netflix's first hit. That and Orange is the New Black. Both came out, like, that first summer where they kind of...
Yeah.
Kind of started that. This is our new, like, original stuff. And they were fantastic, both of them. So anytime their new seasons come out, I'm all in.
Yeah, Cards 100%. Cards, I think, put Netflix, or at least Netflix original programming, on the map.
Yep.
Very cool. Now, does Robin Wright shoot 3 soldiers with 3 arrows at one time at any point in the season?
No, but I'll tell you, she does some dirty deeds. I'll leave it at that. I mean, she is stone cold.
Oh, so, all right, a friend of mine a long time ago, this is actually probably season 1, asked Carmella and Tony Soprano versus Frank and Claire Underwood, which couple is more evil. And at the time, people were on the fence leaning towards the Underwoods, but would you give it towards them now? Because... Carmella Soprano wasn't that evil.
Yeah, now they've pushed that fence on top of the Sopranos and walked right over it.
Oh, really?
They're dirty deeds, man. This season pushed it to 11. I mean...
11.
Yeah, crazy.
Why don't you just make 10 louder?
Because this goes to 11.
Thank you so much for following up that. Now, you don't know how many times I give that quote and nobody knows what I'm talking about.
Spinal Tap, folks. I'm bowing. Spinal Tap.
Boom. That's awesome. I've always wanted to get back into Cards, but I never did. You may have just talked me into it.
This season was the best one. You should.
But no Kate Mara, right? She was out in season 2.
Yes, but her character still is coming back around in this season, where her character is important to the storyline. I'll leave it at that.
Alrighty. Solid Netflix talk. We're going to tag Netflix on this episode, because we love Netflix. Yay.
We do. All right, get into your going forward. That's all I have.
No, you know what's funny? I forgot about one topic I wanted to ask you about before the going forward. We should have done something crazy, like an hour's worth of show prep. Patty Jenkins, I think right now, might be the hottest name director-wise in Hollywood.
So hot right now.
It feels like her name is attached to someone. They just attached her name to Man of Steel Part 2, even.
Yeah, that's weird. I don't know.
I hope that doesn't happen, honestly, because I want her to just... As far as the DCEU is concerned, just make Wonder Woman your own, control Wonder Woman, and give, you know, your input whenever there's crossovers. I think right now they've confirmed there will be a Wonder Woman 2, and they've confirmed that they want Gal Gadot and Patty Jenkins back. That's the only confirmations that they can give towards the films.
Yeah, which is weird because there's been talk of, what, Justice League? Bringing back Robin Wright. It's like, well, how are you doing this? Yeah. I mean, unless you're doing just flashback scenes.
And
this is what I talked about last week when we reviewed it. It sucks when you do these period pieces because you can't bring those characters back.
Yeah. That will be
Pine,
interesting.
How are you going to bring Pine back? They're talking about that, but how? I mean...
But they did confirm Nielsen and Wright are going to be in Justice League, but how are they going to bring Chris Pine? That's got to be all flashbacks. It's got to be all flashback stuff.
Has to be. Either that or they're going to do some... Mirakuru shit.
Or the Flash points all of them back to World War I.
Yeah, who knows?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, either way, I think Patty Jenkins, well-deserved, because all of her stuff is good. Like, if you look at her resume, all of her work is good stuff, so...
Now, what else? I'm not familiar. What else?
She did Monster.
Oh, okay.
With, what's her name? Charlize Theron. That was like her big name. But see, she did a lot of TV in between, like The Killing, and she did some Entourage, only a couple episodes.
Oh, yeah. I love The Killing. Okay.
I think Betrayal was a pilot that I forgot. But then not a lot of stuff, you know, so it's a very limited sample size. I mean, you and I loved Entourage. I couldn't tell you which episode she did. I bet you in the episode she did, they thought they were going to go broke. They saw some naked women, and then they found out at the end that the studio is going to give them double their price.
Yep, that's every episode, every season.
Yeah, we watched every episode of every season. Loved me some
Entourage. Speaking of which, Ballers comes back soon, which is basically Entourage with The Rock.
This is true. Are you caught up there?
Oh, yeah, I love that show.
Hey, we could do, like, a weekly episode of that.
Maybe, yeah.
Not weekly. I don't know if we could do Ballers weekly. All right, going forward, are you ready?
I'm always ready.
Rough Night, starring ScarJo, Scarlett Johansson, Kate McKinnon, Zoe Kravitz. That's the one where the women, they go out on a bachelorette party, and they're older, and they decide to really do it up, but then the male stripper dies, and hijinks pursue. And 47 Meters Down, this is Mandy Moore's first film since doing This Is Us. Matthew Modine's in this. The two girls are trapped in the shark cage that gets snapped down there. The Book of Henry, the only reason I thought this was of note is because all of Leftovers is like The Book of Nora and The Book of Kevin. So I was like, oh, maybe this is like the movie of Leftovers. But it's not. So I got sad.
Yeah, who's the star in that one?
Naomi Watts. There's Naomi
That's right.
Watts.
That's right. I saw the trailer. It looks interesting.
Sarah Silverman. La la la. And then we have the important ones of Cars 3. Owen Wilson is back. Chris Cooper, Nathan Fillion. For part 3, hopefully they do better than 2. I didn't like Cars part 2.
No, and I'm not jazzed for part 3 from what I've seen.
No. I don't understand the concept. Like, if they're all souped up cars, can't they all just go the same speed?
Yeah, I don't know.
Whatever. They never, like, show them working out.
Yeah, I mean, at least part 2 was, like, a different storyline.
Yeah.
Like, give it that, at least. But...
sure. So, Cars 3... will be Roy's number one seed and his final pick in the movie draft. He's currently sitting at $22 million total from Arthur and Wimpy Kid. And he needs probably about like 170 to solidify a chance at winning our pool.
Oh, jeez.
I don't think that's going to happen. I would put money that this makes $78 million this weekend.
That might even be high. I don't know. I mean, I know it's Disney, but I don't know.
It is going up against Craig's number 3 pick of All Eyes on Me, which is the true and untold story of prolific rapper Tupac Shakur, Demetrius Shipp, and Cat Graham, directed by Benny Boom. I don't see this making any money for Craig, but maybe we'll get $20 million out of it.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, I think he was hoping for that Straight out of Compton thing, but...
what did that make? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I just know it was a hit. But again, that might not be a big first weekend. It might be a more overall word of mouth.
Well, we've got coming out this weekend. Let's see. Straight out of Compton, Lifetime, opening... oh, no. I'm way off. Made $60 million opening weekend.
That's not bad.
So if Craig could pull that, let's say he pulls a $50 million out of Eyes on Me. Wouldn't you be, you know, obviously... less. That'll put him at 153 overall.
Still less than Nick.
Yeah. That wraps us up. That's our going forward. We are Take Two Podcast. Coming up right next, we have Craig and his one-on-one interview with the Random Tropical Paradise director and writer. It's pretty awesome, and you guys should check out the film and send us your thoughts. Take2Podcast@gmail.com, at Take Two Podcast on the Twitter, Facebook. You can look us up. And honestly, folks, check our website daily, take2podcast.com, because we are putting up a lot of new material, and you can interact with us there as well if you'd like.
And if you happen to be in the Baltimore area on Wednesdays this summer, come up and check us out. We're going to be at the Hard Rock Cafe for Brews and Beats.
Yeah, it's a great time. New band, a local band, someone who's unknown, and they're usually rocking out pretty hard, and then a local brewery, different one each week, outdoor, on the water. It's beautiful. It's a good time, and you get to talk with us. We can interview you and ask you bunch of questions, do a little trivia, maybe even give you a prize. That will wrap up episode 35. Tony, thanks, man. This was a good show.
Yeah, good time.
Have a good night, everybody.
See you. Thanks for listening.
Folks, welcome back to Take Two Podcast. This is your host, Craig. We are joined by a very special guest right now from the newly released movie, Random Tropical Paradise. Came out June 9th. Various theaters and video on demand everywhere you can get it. We have the writer, director, producer, Sanjeev Sirpal. How you doing, Sanjeev? Thanks for joining us today.
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. I'm so glad you're able to come. I mean, the movie's spectacular. We were able to check it out on the screener, which we really appreciate. And I know you guys are doing some Q&As, you said, out in L.A. and New York and Atlanta.
Yes. Have Q&As with the cast and myself in those cities. So, yeah, there is no rest for the weary.
No.
It's been a blast, though.
Of course not. But it is available on video on demand, iTunes, Amazon, all those places for anybody else to get it, and not in those nice, cool, select cities.
Yes. It's iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, Microsoft Movies, Sony Entertainment Network. Basically any VOD platform you can think of, Vudu, we're on all of those as well. So if you're not seeing it in the theater in L.A., New York, or Atlanta, you can definitely see it in the comfort of your own home.
Perfect. So how did this movie come together? Is this something you've always had in your head? Did you get left at the altar or anything like that?
No. Thankfully, I did not get left at the altar. I am married to a wonderful Wonder Woman, a superhuman of a woman, who does not realize yet that she's way out of my league. she has horrible eyesight, and it works in my favor. She keeps on asking or thinking about getting LASIK, and I'm like, never.
Oh no, we don't want that to happen. No.
But I was, you know, the genesis of the movie was kind of. Sort of tapping into that zeitgeist of, you know, the feeling that I'm sure everyone has gone through at some point of, you know, that heartbreak of a relationship ending. And, you know, sometimes when it ends and you are not, you know, you didn't see it coming or you are not ending it, it's being ended for you.
Right.
I guess is the feeling of that. You know, I was kind of thinking, you know, that's the sort of the emotional center of it. And it's sort of playing into that Tolstoy quote that I'm going to butcher. But it's that whole, you know, while two people might have had different experiences through art, they can share the same emotion. What's the movie version of that universal feeling? And like, what's the most over the top way that you can show that? So I was thinking, okay, like, what's the biggest, you know, craziest way for a kind of screwball comedy to show that kind of thing happening. And it's like, oh, happens at a wedding. And not only does it happen at the wedding, it happens to, you know, the guy, like, right before they're about to get married in the most, like, you know, fantastic way possible. And fantastic, not, like, fantastic great, but, like, fantastic, like, crazy.
Oh, yes. Fantastic, horribly crushing.
Yeah, exactly. Fantastic and like that soul crushing kind of
right way. Right yeah
and then you know and then from there it's like you know everyone has that sort of everyone has their different story of how they got over that sort of breakup and you know more often than not it's not only what they did but it's what their friends did to rally around them to get them out of that funk and sometimes it gives you sort of that pass of like all right like this just happened and now I have free reign for stuff to start getting weird because I'm just going to go nuts and not have to worry about it for a little while. I'm just going to deal with me and, you know, throw caution to the wind because I've earned this.
Exactly. Kind of exactly.
and that leads to, you know, in the movie, again, kind of what is the most heightened version or the craziest way to depict that. And it's like, oh, instead of canceling, you know, you already canceled the wedding instead of canceling the honeymoon as well. What if the groom and the best man went on the honeymoon together as a homie moon, if you will, and then have hijinks ensue.
Yeah, which is genius, and I don't know why I don't hear about this happening more when weddings fall apart, because this is a genius idea that I feel all best men and groomsmen should be doing when this happens.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we should, you know, I should probably look into, you know, writing the guidebook or writing the book of, you know, here's the survival guide to what happens if you get you know, to the altar, but not necessarily past the altar at a wedding.
Exactly. So while there were tons of basically you could almost call them hijinks that happened through to these two guys the entire time, were there any personal experiences you had that you put into the script?
I mean, definitely sort of I've had relationships end not the way I thought they were going to end.
Because they were married to mob bosses and stuff?
Something like that.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it always happens. You know, if that that age old, oh man, if I can only find a girl who's not married to a mob boss.
Right, exactly.
Gotten at the, you know, in terms of, and then in terms of like, you know, I've definitely had the, a lot of it would be sort of even conversations that I've had with friends of mine mm-hmm. that I'll sort of throw into the movie. Like, I've definitely had that Danny Trejo conversation with friends of mine.
Oh, yes, we have to get into that because that, I mean, the love for Danny Trejo in this movie is so obvious and, you know, needs to be expressed, I think, in all movies.
Oh, that love is real, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I absolutely, you know, that's not even, that's the writer's voice coming through in the film being like, every movie needs to have Danny Trejo.
Yeah,
I was
hoping and, had you know, praying that somehow he would just show up randomly at the end of this movie.
We were talking about having, I don't know if I want to give this away, but we were talking about sort of segueing into, you know, say we do like a random, you know, knock on wood, do we do a random Tropical Paradise sequel or something like that?
Right.
The stinger post-credit sequence is like, you know, Bowie getting onto a flight and he sits down and as he's getting to his seat, he kind of looks around and realizes that he's on the stripper flight. And then he, like, looks to his right, and he sees, you know, one of the strippers on the stripper flight, and then he looks to his left, and it's Danny Trejo.
I mean, you know, that he could die happy right there.
Mm-hmm. We had so many, I'd written so many other, like, we have so many more Danny Trejo in, you know, blockbuster movies that were written and that we shot, and you know, and then the cast, we were all just sitting there. Even for like days afterwards, just coming up even on the set being like, oh, what about this one for Danny Trejo? It was just like, it was a ton of fun.
Right, I feel like that scene in the hotel where they were doing it probably was, you know, filming wise, 15 to 20 minutes long, and you just had to shorten it down a little bit to actually fit into a film.
Oh yeah, it could have been an hour, it could have been a whole movie of just the two guys sitting there talking about different movies that would have been better if Danny Trejo starred in them.
Right Exactly. So, I mean, that gets a little bit into the cast you had in this film. I mean, you had Brian Greenberg and Brooks Whelan. You know, I've seen some other things that are pretty funny. But, I mean, you had tons of, you know, famous people in here. Kyle Kinane and Beth Littlefield and, I mean, Joey Pantoliano. And I don't even know how you were able to get him. Like, that's incredible. He's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he, when he, I was on a plane when he signed on and we landed and I didn't have my Wi-Fi connected or something. I got on the plane and we landed and I had all these like texts and calls from our casting directors who deserve a ton of credit. Our casting directors, Blind Nailing and Janelle Scuderi, who were able to, they basically gave me the opportunity to be able to put this cast together. I mean, they were ridiculous. I cannot thank them enough for giving me this dream cast. Or allowing me to put together this dream cast. But yeah, basically we landed on the, I landed and I, you know, their messages were all, call me right now. And I called them and they were like, Joey Pants is in. And I freaked out in an airport.
Right.
And then
realized as
I was
you
in
should.
Airport freaking out and then ran out of the airport and then freaked out at a safe distance from the airport.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah. And I, you know, I emailed Joe after he had signed on just to, you know, say, I'm so excited to work with you. I, you know, thank you so much for being a part of the movie. I can't wait to, you know, get to set and, you know, make something hilarious. And he wrote back saying he liked the script so much that he agreed to do the film before he even got to his part. And I, to which point I replied, you know, I did actually. I framed that email, and that email is now in a frame
as you should.
On the wall of my office.
And you threw away your pants at that point because they were useless.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it was the casting was meticulous in the sense that, you know, sent the script to Brian, and he wanted to meet me, and he and I sat down like 2 days before his wedding and had like a 4-hour meeting just talking about the script, breaking down the character elements for his character, talking about, I mean, it was great. It was a phenomenal meeting. And then driving back from that meeting, I got the call that he had signed on and he was like, all right, this was great. I'm going to go get married. I'll talk to you, you know, next week.
Right.
And,
exactly.
You know, the work he put into this is, I'm so appreciative of. I mean, you know, it's what I like to call a stupid comedy for smart people, but it's hard to pull that off. And, you know, it's all grounded grounded and centered and believable because of his performance.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And he definitely put in the work for it. I mean, it was really refreshing and really crazy and awesome to have. I mean, that was like the first of like a few of these like 4-hour meetings that he and I would have, talking about the script, talking about the characters, you know, all the background and everything. And it was, I mean, you can see it in the performance in the sense that like he's a pro. And, you know, you see it in the film with the, you know, how he brings it all together. And then even the relationship with him and Brooks, they became really, that was an awesome thing about the shooting as well, is that like we all became really good friends. Like we would hang out after the shoot and all go out and have dinner and just hang out in each other's hotel rooms. And, you know, we do escape rooms together and stuff. And, and even after the, you know, because you hear all these things about people go and do movies and then, you know, the movie's done and they scatter.
Right, right.
We all still keep in touch, you know, and then we'll all hang out and get together when we have the opportunities to. And he and Brooks became really good friends on set, and they continue to, you know, hang out all the time, you know, they continue their friendship even to this day. And that relationship you see in the film, or the relationship they, you know, they formed and have in real life, definitely came off in the film as well, that they're these two best friends that are like, you know, really looking out for each other. Brooks, you know, is he's a superstar, man. It was like such a great you know, breakout role for him. And he actually read for Randy originally, and after his Randy reading, I was talking with the casting directors and I was like, he would be a really good Bowie. And they were like, oh, we were thinking the same thing. And yeah, he crushes it. I mean, he, you know, this cast is, they make me look way more talented than I probably actually am.
Oh, look at you being all humble and stuff.
And they, you know, I could go to, you know, Spencer Grammer, Aidan Mayeri, Jessica Lowe is hilarious. She absolutely nailed her part when I was Googling everything I could find about her for that part. And she has this video on YouTube of like a 12-year-old boy. It's her doing a character of a 12-year-old boy reading 50 Shades of Grey for the first time.
It's perfect.
Yeah, and it's so funny that I was like, oh, she's got to be B. Spencer, I ended up randomly talking. She had no idea who I was when I walked in, and I was talking to her. I was talking to her like outside the casting office before she was coming in to read. You know, we were talking about like Swedish coffee beans or something, and I was like that. And when I walked into the casting room, I was like, "Oh, Colette's outside. You know, she's gonna come in." But I was like, "She's absolutely Colette. Come in and read and everything." But we're giving her that part.
Right. This is just a formality now.
This is just a formality. Yeah. If she can read, then this part is hers. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like Brittany Ferlin, on her, as she came in and was literally like, oh, this is my part. I know this character so well. I can do this. Let me do my like Philly accent. And she walked in, you know, declared that this was her part. And damn it, she was right. You know, and she did that audition, and her performance, like her throwaway lines are so funny. How she does them and what she did with every line that she had in this film is it comes off so well. I mean, it's hilarious. It's so funny how she like really made this character her. I'm just gonna go and talk about every
we'll just go down the entire cast list. That's fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kyle has been my favorite comedian, you know, since I first saw him at the Largo in 2009. And I actually wrote this part for him. His voice was in my head when I was writing the part, so it was like crazy surreal when we were casting. And, you know, I kept on telling the casting directors, like, I wrote this part for Kyle. You know, it might be hard to cast because I just see Kyle as this part. And they were just like, well, why don't we just see if we can get Kyle? And we got Kyle, and it was crazy. Like, hearing him actually say the lines that I was already hearing in my head of him saying when I was writing it, was amazing. Like, he would, you know, we would sit there on set, and he would be, you know, asking things about how to say, you know, how, you know, performance and any notes I had or anything. And I was like, nope, if you say it, then it's perfect.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly how I pictured it.
Yeah.
And then Beth was another, you know, Beth Littleford, like, she was, you know, the first female correspondent on The Daily Show, has done Crazy Stupid Love and like these hilarious comedies, and, you know, comes in and crushes all her scenes with her and Kyle are insane. And you know, it was a lot of that, you know, everyone just really responded to the script, which I was really, really, it was very humbling to have these people that, like, I look up to that are now gravitating towards something that I wrote and want to be a part of that as well. So that was super cool. You know, and Alfonso was another person that came in and, like, crushed his audition and is so funny as Randy, which was such a, like, I loved writing that Randy character. So finding that person, you know, I was anticipating it was gonna be, okay, this is going to be a tricky task because I had a lot of fun writing these scenes. And, you know, Alfonso came in and I was like, oh, okay, that wasn't going to be hard at all. Like,
right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I can't believe between, you know, Kinane and Beth Littlefield and Joey Pants and all these incredibly hot women you had around, like, any work actually got done to make a movie.
I mean, if you do it right, it's not work. It's literally, we're just having, you know, we're playing make-believe. We're having fun, just like, you know, as long as a camera is running while we were having that fun, then that's the work that needs to be done, you know?
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, it was a lot of, you know, it was a lot of, yeah, I literally talked about everybody in the cast, and then I can't believe I was, Aiden is, like, blowing up everywhere now, too. She's, like, when we cast her, she was, like, the young ingenue coming into, you know, in Hollywood and sort of making her name, and then, you know, she crushed our movie and now is in, like, every single high-profile TV show.
Right, exactly.
Like, premiering on Sundance, and, like, everyone's just so funny. It was so fun. Like, yeah, you just didn't realize you were working, I guess. So it's almost just, it's totally that, like, yeah, it's surprising we got any work done, but it was kind of just we'll set up the shots, we'll have the camera run, and then we'll just play.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, fantastic, and comes across, hopefully, on the screen.
Oh, it definitely does. So it was shot in Florida, right? That's where you guys ended up shooting it? Because it looks amazing.
Yes, yeah, we shot it in St. Petersburg, Florida, this ridiculous resort that we stayed at, and we also shot there, called the Trade Winds. Let us play around on their, like, pristine white sand beaches.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, take over this, like, cool, sleepy little beach town.
Right, right. And I'm sure, you know, there were a couple times where you're like, well, maybe that shot wasn't perfect. We're going to need to stay another week just to be sure.
Yeah, totally. We could hear they have, like, a guy, you know, our rooms are all overlooking the beach, and we would basically hear, I mean, it was almost that cliche, like, you couldn't write this scene where you hear someone, like, playing Jimmy Buffett, and it's coming into your hotel room, and you look outside, and it's, like, this Jimmy Buffett cover band playing on the beach.
Exactly.
And they're, like, making s'mores around a fire pit.
Yeah, that's the perfect background for a random tropical paradise. Like,
totally. And that's what they just did. We just were like, oh, what's going on downstairs? And they're like, nah, it's Thursday night.
That's it, you know. So I have to ask, because I did notice it, you know, as I'm watching the credits, you know, I have to ask about what you now consider to be the world's best donuts in the universe, Sidecar Donuts and Coffee, that you thanked in there, which now means that when I head out to L.A., I'm going to have to go to Sidecar just to see if this is correct.
Oh, absolutely. I will put up Sidecar as the greatest donut anyone will ever have, and I am undefeated in anyone who has dared to challenge me against Sidecar. They are on Wilshire and 6th, and are, when we were doing color correction in post for the movie, the supervisor there, the director of the post house, Heather told me about this place, and I was like, oh, I'll walk over, because I was telling her, you know, how much I love donuts and whatnot, and I was like, oh, I'll walk over and check it out. It was only 4 blocks away. It is mind-blowing. They are hands down the best donuts. I have gotten people who hate donuts hooked on Sidecar.
Who hates donuts? What kind of weird people are you hanging out with?
That's true. Well, I mean, yeah, I was so quick to convert them to Sidecar that I didn't even realize that I should be questioning both their choices and my choices for hanging out with them on the fact that they didn't love donuts.
Right, but exactly.
Sidecar is insane. They have these, like, butter and salt ones and, like, huckleberry donuts, and like vanilla twists are sort of like their staples, and then they just rotate monthly with these like ridiculous flavors of I don't know how they come up with it and how they make it. I just know that like I can eat a dozen in a sitting and not feel bad about myself at all.
I think it's a great idea, and we're obviously going to cut this out and just send it to Sidecar, you know, expecting some free donuts for a, you know, 5-minute commercial for him. Mm-hmm. It seems like the movie's, you know, it's amazing from everything we've been able to see from it. Like I said, we saw the screener and everything. Has the reception been pretty strong at the screenings that you've been to and what you've been hearing from people?
Yeah. I mean, it's great to, hear a theater full of people laughing at stuff we made. It's been fantastic. I mean, looking at audience reviews on, like, the, you know, IMDb and iTunes and Amazon and things like that, like, we're, you know, 5-star reviews and what people are saying that have seen it have been great. And then even, you know, just across our social media channels for the movie and you know, people, their response to clips that have been released in the press have been amazing. High Times magazine actually released an exclusive clip, and I've never seen a clip on the internet that didn't have at least one, internet troll comment.
Right, obviously.
Until this High Times clip that they posted for, you know, on their page and on YouTube and everything like that. I've never seen, I mean, it just every single comment was like, I can't wait to see this movie. I've got to see this movie. The High Times followers are my people. The response has been fantastic and overwhelming. It makes me very happy for all of the, while it is a very fun summer movie, a lot of us put a lot of hard work into it, and it makes me happy that, you know, that's paying off in that the audience is responding to a movie that we made for them. So that's good.
That's good. Yeah, that's perfect. That's perfect. And all of our listeners, they can go to our website again, take2podcast.com. You can check out the review we wrote for it. It'll be posted there. We'll talk about how much we love the movie and everything like that. And, I mean, like, the writing is tremendous in it, you know, so I got to give you complete credit for that. I mean, the jokes in there, even if it was all improv and you had nothing to do with it, just take complete credit for it. So I have to ask you before we go, we always ask any guest that comes on to Take Two, we always ask him this one question. So if you're ready for it, we'll give it to you.
All right, let me take my, I'm gonna take the position, I'm gonna take the stance to be ready for
right.
it.
Right. So you're walking down the street, you see walking towards you Harrison Ford. Do you think, oh my God, that's Han Solo, or do you think, oh my God, that's Indiana Jones?
Oh, that's a good one. Honestly, I think, oh my God, that's Indiana Jones dressed as Han Solo.
Perfect. Look at that. You're getting both answers.
I would actually be like, oh my God, that's Indiana Jones. But the first thing I would still yell is probably like, Greedo didn't shoot first.
We know. We support you.
We support you.
Perfect. That answer couldn't be any better.
Great.
Mm-hmm. But thank you so much again for joining us. We really appreciate it, Sanjeev. Again, guys, if you want to check it out, it's Random Tropical Paradise. Just came out this past Friday, the 9th. It's on VOD everywhere, all across the country, all across the world. iTunes, Amazon, pretty much anywhere you can get on-demand programming, you can find it there. It is in a few select theaters, like you mentioned, L.A., New York, Atlanta, anything like that. So if it's in your area, go check it out in the theater. Otherwise, get it on demand, check it out in a let Sanjeev know how much you like the movie. Thanks again for joining us so much. I really appreciate it, man.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is great.
Mm-hmm. All right.